You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
It's everyone's favorite tournament of the year. The golfers are in Augusta, Georgia to compete for the coveted jacket. And DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is putting you in the center of action by giving you a shot to land in the green. This week, DraftKings is giving you a free shot at the $1 million top prize when you download and sign up using promo code THPN. If you haven't tried DraftKings, this is the time. It's easy to play. Pick six golfers, stay under the salary cap, and submit your lineup before the tournament tees off early Thursday morning, then sit back and follow the action. Download the DraftKings app now and use promo code THPN during sign-up. This week, DraftKings is putting you in the action with a free shot at the $1 million top prize. That's code THPN, and you can get a free shot at the $1 million top prize only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Hello and good day, San Jose, and welcome to the Stick Hungry Podcast, your home of the San Jose Sharks on the Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dylan Kayser, and I'm joined in studio by Producer T. We also have Nick Floor on the line. Producer T, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Dylan. Another beautiful day in Ladysmith.
Another beautiful.
One of our last weeks in Ladysmith.
One of our last weeks
That's
at
why
this.
I wanted to make sure I said Ladysmith.
There you go. Yeah, give Ladysmith a shout out. I think there's like 8,000 people in this town. They're all gonna love it. We're moving on up. We're moving to Nanaimo. That's right, all you Californians. You don't know where the hell that is, but it's an upgrade. Nick knows because he has no option to know. Yeah. Nick, how you doing? How are the allergies treating you? I know that pollen. I know you haven't brought it up at all, but I've heard from other people that the pollen's pretty bad.
Yeah, things have gotten a little better. Like I said, you get used to it after the shit gets kicked after winter. Well, California winter, not real winter. But yeah, doing good, you know, just struggling with the housing market still. So still doing great, though.
Living the dream, boys.
Yeah. Living the dream, forever renting. Hashtag millennial shit. Fuck.
Hey, well, at least you're not Kyle MacLaren right now, because I believe he's out slugging away building someone's deck.
Yeah.
Outside what looks like a mobile home.
Yeah, some ants. I don't know.
Some ants and black widow.
Yeah, ants and black widow spiders.
God damn, dude.
I tell you.
Should have just come on the pod.
It's a lot easier here.
I got a thing.
Yeah. All right, boys. Let's give a shout out to our Twitter handles. You can follow myself at DYL_THPN. You can follow the show at Stick Hungry Pod, and you can follow the network at Hockey Pod Net. Producer T.
You can follow myself at Producer_TEE.
And Nick.
You can find me at @NickFloor_.
And Kyle the Builder.
At @McLaren_K. Everyone listening on the podcast is like, why is there a pause? It's like, oh, we're just waiting.
Yeah.
One day.
All right. Let's get into some Sharks talk. What do we want to start off with, Nick?
Well, you know, we got a really We got a nice interview scheduled for you guys to listen to later on with Chris Peters of Talking Hockey Sense with Chris Peters.
And he did talk some sense into us. Did. So it was, yeah, it was a great interview, though.
Really educated us folk about the upcoming draft, Sharks prospects. You guys are going to really love it. But, you know, right off the top, we got Christian Jaros making his Sharks debut because Marc-Edouard Vlasic is out with an upper body injury. So he's going to be making his Sharks debut alongside Radim Šimek. He's a right-handed shot, defensive defenseman. So I don't expect much. I just want him to not give up an odd man rush. So,
well, and producer T loves this move as well because, I mean, you can pronounce that name, right?
Yeah.
That's not the hardest on the Sharks roster or in the Sharks system, so we're good.
He's like, oh, fuck, is it Jaros or Jaros?
Yeah. I'll probably still screw that up.
Honestly, though, this Sharks organization, like, the names that we have in this organization are a bit ridiculous. It's like, crazy. There's only a handful of easy ones. Martin Jones.
Yeah, Martin Jones, Brad Burns. That's it.
You don't like Matt Nieto?
Yeah, that's not
easy.
Bad.
On paper, like, that's not that easy. Well, I guess it could
that's be. Pretty yeah, easy. It is. That's, Long Beach native Matt Nieto. You know, one word.
It's all that's his full legal name.
According to Randy Hahn, it sure
like
is.
Nieto or some shit, thinking he's some like from somewhere in Asia. Nieto.
Nieto.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next topic here. And we did bring it up last time on the podcast, but the Sharks are looking to maybe take on some cap space, weaponize that cap space that they do have, and maybe acquire a couple of picks. Again, I don't know if this is still the plan going into the trade deadline. I think it's really going to depend on the standings because, I mean, we're only a few points out of the playoffs right now behind the Arizona Coyotes. So I think if we're in the mix of it, I don't know how active we're going to be at the trade deadline. What do you guys think?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's going to be a really decisive week when it comes to, you know, what the playoff picture looks like, where we're going to be after the next 2-3 games before the trade deadline. I think it's literally going to be kind of be that last minute as to when they're going to, you know, pull the plug or not, or you know, hit the button. So.
And I think right now I don't have the standings in front of me, but I think we're 5 points behind Arizona, but we have 2 games in hand.
Yeah.
So if you do win those 2 games, obviously we'd only be 1 behind. And the St. Louis Blues are out of the playoffs right now, which is kind of amazing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for me personally, I still think they're going to approach it as being sellers at the deadline and trying to acquire assets. Doug Wilson said he's going to continue to try to play the reset, focus on the young guys. We have Anaheim tonight, as we're recording this, we have Anaheim, then LA, Anaheim. And everyone's looking at that like, oh, we can make a big push. Yeah, but the rest of the schedule is not easy. We're facing the top 4 teams afterwards, teams that we've struggled with, Minnesota, Arizona, Vegas, and then, of course, getting slobber knocked by fucking Colorado at every possible chance. So while I do feel like, yeah, the Sharks will probably make up ground, the Coyotes are still winning their games. And we still have to go against the Coyotes. Like, we have multiple games to play against them. I think either 3 or 4. I think it's 4 total games. On top of 3 more games against Vegas, 3 more against Minnesota, 4 more against Colorado. So I feel like Doug Wilson's looking at the bigger picture. And he's saying, you know what? Yeah, those 4 wins in a row were nice. But let's be real here. You got to look long term. So I still feel like he's going to try to take on a shitty contract and like a 3-way deal. He's going to be that bridge.
Oh, we're talking 3 ways now, eh?
Oh, yeah. 3 ways on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Well, here's the thing, too. Like, if you're still in the playoff picture going into the trade deadline, that doesn't stop you from acquiring a guy with a shitty contract and getting some assets with that, because he can either play for you and, you know, he might be an overpaid guy that you can maybe put on your 4th or 3rd line and you still get that asset back. So I think you can have it both ways there.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll look at the 4th line right now, right? So let's actually take just a quick rundown. 1st line's fine. 2nd line, my balls hurt. 3rd line's the young guns, right? So 3rd line, you got Donato, Leonard, and Dylan Gambrell.
Yeah.
So your 4th line is your misfits. It's just, we said
whoever's there, whoever's there.
Like, yeah. Who's not on the taxi squad? Oh, we have to dress him. Yeah. So it's VL, Marlowe, who's just on the roster to break the record, and Sorensen. And Sorensen is the biggest replaceable piece right there. So there's one guy. So you're not going to get worse by adding a shitty contract, shitty player. You could possibly get better. It's like they're at the bottom. in my opinion.
Because unless you're taking on a contract like Louis Eriksson, then you're just you're really diving there.
Would you rather have Sorensen or Louis Eriksson?
Honestly, I'd probably rather have Sorensen. Yeah. After watching too much of Louis Eriksson, it's frustrating. Yeah. But it is a good point though, because you know I've heard that some Canadian teams are actually interested in Sorensen. So you move Sorensen, let's say you get a fourth round pick, third round pick, something like that. You take on a bad contract and you get another second or third round pick. You replace Sorensen with that bad contract, whoever you brought back. I'd call that a win at the trade deadline for this team.
Yeah.
It's not like you're generating offense with that line anyways. All the offense is coming from the top six and Erik Karlsson at this point. So I still presume Doug Wilson to be the middleman in an NHL three-way.
All right, let's move on from the three-way talk here. Martin Jones, producer T, you're a big fan of Martin Jones, and he's absolutely killing it right now. Second star of the week, 4-0 record with a goals against average of 1.71, under two goals against average, save percentage 942. I mean, this guy's an all-star, absolute all-star.
Four games,
that's all you need.
I think Solomon's going to have to start up the fan club again.
I think he will. I think he will. I think
Martin Jones heard he disbanded the fan club, and that was it. Got to get Solomon back on side.
You know, I hate to be Kyle MacLaren in everyone's ears right now, but it's just the Kings and the Ducks.
Hold up, Nick. Your internet's cutting up there.
No, it's a great point, though.
As many times as we've like laughed at Kyle for saying that, it's 100% true. Like they're both in rebuild mode, so you would expect the Sharks to beat them, and you'd expect Martin Jones to absolutely trounce those teams. So,
yeah,
I don't think we should read too much into this. Like well, I said,
nice
we got
to see him actually do what is expected, though. We haven't had that in a while, so
yeah, last year we didn't have that. So if you're talking baby steps, that's nice to see from like the Sharks and as a fan. You know, from our perspective, essentially. But I don't expect him to just waltz on into Vegas and post a shutout against Vegas. So if he does, I will eat my hat. So
it's Martin Jones we're talking about, boys. Come on, 4-0, 1-7-1. Come on.
A confirmed live streaming eating of your hat if he shuts out
the Kings? I think it was. I think that's exactly what that was. That
would be pretty awesome.
If he shuts out the Knights, Vegas Golden Knights, I will eat a portion of the hat.
I do that all the time. I really do. It's annoying. At least have the Knights and the Kings in different conferences. Like, they're so damn close.
They are.
Yeah. Even in lore, like, they're right there. So, fuck.
Yeah. All right. Great Sharks talk.
Great Sharks talk.
Let's, you know what? I think this is a great time to bring on Chris Peters, actually.
Great time.
All right. We're going to move on to our interview with Chris Peters from the Talking Hockey Sense podcast.
And joining us here on the Stick Hungry podcast is Chris Peters from Hockey Sense with Chris Peters. Chris, how you doing, bud? How's the weather treating you?
It's actually great right now. It finally feels like spring. It's warm. You know, it's when the weather changes, even though we're still kind of hanging out in hockey rinks. Well, we usually would be hanging out in hockey rinks. You know, that warmer weather means it's a fun time of the year because there's, you know, playoff races and this year there's trade deadlines. It's kind of weird, but you know, we got the Frozen Four and certainly normally I'd be getting geared up for the draft, but we got some time between now and then. So lot happening, but yeah, it's all, as always, it's really nice when the weather warms up as it has so far.
Nice. Well, the Hockey Podnet boys, Dylan and T, they're based out of Vancouver. I'm in California, so it's nice weather.
Sorry. Vancouver Island. Oh, we're not Vancouver. Me.
It's the same thing. No, it's not. It's like you say LA in Northern California is the same thing. That's how it feels to us.
That. You're thinking of another guy, bud.
Chris, where are you based out of, my man?
I live in Eastern Iowa near between Iowa City and Cedar Rapids, which may mean nothing to anyone. But yeah, you know, I'm originally from Chicago. My wife is originally from Iowa. So, at one point when she got a job out here, we moved out here, and that is kind of how I decided, to figure out how the heck I was going to have a hockey career in Iowa and not a playing career, but a career covering the sport, and somehow it worked out. So yeah, so I've been in Iowa for like 10 years or maybe 11 years now. Before that, I was at USA Hockey and in living in Michigan. And yeah, so it's just kind of like a crazy winding path to get to this point. But we actually really like it here. So I wouldn't change it for anything.
That's good to hear. So essentially, before we get into the prospect talk, what brought about your interest in hockey originally? Like, where did it stem from? And how did you get into the scouting side of the hockey universe?
Yeah, so it's been a winding path. I mean, really, my passion for hockey starts as a kid. My dad was into hockey, and I grew up in Chicago, and so obviously the Blackhawks were a big deal, especially in the, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and at that point the Blackhawks were actually pretty good. And then about the 2000s, when I was a little older, they were not so good. And really not good. So that was tough, but yeah, I mean, I basically, I played a little bit, not well. I played youth hockey and played up in until about my junior year of high school. And then I was just like, yeah, I'm done with that. So, but yeah, my passion for the game really never went away. So what happened then is, I went to Iowa State University, worked for the men's hockey team, which was an ACHA team. I was filming games on VHS cameras for the coaches to break down. And now we have all this great editing software and we can watch shift by shift stuff. And back then we were literally
I was about to say, don't age yourself now with the VHS.
Yeah, well, I'm really not aging myself that much, because the only reason it was on VHS is because those were the only cameras that I could get from the school for free.
Okay.
So basically, we were at the mercy of what was available to us. And eventually we did digitize my second year. That was my big project, was like, hey, let's go to digital cameras. So we were able to do that. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with that team for 2 years, and then managed to get really lucky to get a career started in hockey by getting the Brian Fishman internship at USA Hockey, which was in their PR department. And I was really just looking for anything on the team side to stay involved in sports after my experience at Iowa State. And luckily enough, just because I did everything at Iowa State, everything from, marketing, PR, play-by-play broadcasting, I hosted a TV show on the student cable access channel, I just would do anything I could. And so that kind of helped kind of put me on the map for USA Hockey and said, hey, if you can do all that stuff, you can probably do the stuff that we need you to do here. I started there. Then I worked at the National Team Development Program for 2 years after my internship. And that's really where the whole, scouting/prospect interest comes in, because I was at the NTDP, which is where most of the top American players play. When I was there, we had the 91, the 90s, 91s, or 91s, 92s, and 93s. So like Cam Fowler was there. Matt Nieto was there when I was there. So for Sharks fans, shout out Matt Nieto. I think I wrote the first story about Matt in USA Hockey Magazine. And then there was Jack Campbell. I had a lot of great players that were there while I was there. And that was really where I got my interest in kind of scouting, and the coaches were great. So I had Ron Ralston, John Hines. Those were the head coaches my first year there. And they were really cool to just let me sit in and watch video with them, like as they're breaking down the game film, and I'm getting to find out what coaches like and what they don't like. And, Tim Taylor was one of our assistant coaches, and he was the 94 U.S. Olympic coach and coached at Yale for many years, and eventually became kind of USA Hockey's head scout for like the World Juniors. So he would talk with me and we'd talk shop, and just learning from people like that was incredible. I mean, John Hines is in the NHL. Ron Ralston was in the NHL for a while. He's at Providence now. Chad Cassidy, who was the head coach and with the Rochester Americans, and he was one of our assistant coaches, and John Robleski is now with the Ontario Reign. He was one of our young assistant coaches. And I got to learn from those people, and they were so nice to me. And that's kind of where the passion just kind of grew and grew and grew. And you watch these players develop and you see them improve, and then you see them get drafted. And you see guys like Justin Falk, who went in the second round and was, you know, I think he was the fourth or fifth defenseman from his own team drafted, and he's had the longest career of any of them. So you just learn stuff like that. Like, how does this work? You know, how does that happen? So that is my very, very long-winded way of saying a lot of things contributed to this, but I love the game, and I love the way that that things have gone for me, because I'm doing exactly what I want to do and having a lot of fun with it.
So Chris, you actually started up your own podcast recently, yes. Talking Hockey Sense. Can you give us a quick breakdown of what that show is all about?
Sure. Yeah. So Talking Hockey Sense is really the offshoot of Hockey Sense, which is my website with, which is essentially how I'm making my living now, with a subscription based website called Hockey Sense. And that's hockeysense.substack.com. And so I knew when I was going to go independent after being at ESPN for 3 years, I was like, I need to do all the things that I couldn't do while I was at ESPN. And one of those things was a podcast. I was working with Greg Wyshynski and Emily Kaplan, and they had their podcast. They were the two lead writers, and I would guest host sometimes and sometimes come on as a guest, but never got to do my own. So Talking Hockey Sense is kind of, it covers a lot of different bases. I've been lucky enough to have a lot of great guests. So it's always, there's always at least one guest per podcast. And we talk about some of the events that are going on that are current. Like, you know, I had Bob McKenzie on my first podcast. We talked a lot about this draft year and the different things that, we thought could happen, and whether or not we're going to get an OHL season and all those things. And then, I recently had Brad Schlossman, who's a beat writer for the University of North Dakota, and he covers that team. And we talked about all the prospects that were on that team, but also their 5 overtime loss to Minnesota Duluth and all these other things that have been going on. But then we also talked to those people about their careers and the stories that they have. And I think that helps, you know, anybody that has an interest in hockey wonders how you can get into it. And I think a lot of those people have offered some insights in how to get into media, how to get into PR. You know, I have an episode dropping this week that will have Nate Ewell, who used to be Ovi's handler, essentially, for the Capitals. He was in media relations there, but now he works for a company called College Hockey Inc. So we were able to actually preview the men's Frozen Four, but then get in this cool discussion about a very unique career in hockey. So it covers a lot of bases. Obviously, the anchor content for me is always going to be prospect driven. So there will be a lot more about the draft coming up next. There will be a lot more about different kind of things. I'm going to have more hockey specific people, not just media, but coaches and players as well, as we get on. I think, you know, I'm really going to try to dig into that in the off season as well, where we get some people on from inside the game as well. But yeah, it's an all encompassing thing that I'm just having way too much fun with right now.
That's awesome. You mentioned that 5 OT game,
yeah,
between North Dakota and Minnesota Duluth. So I was a little under the weather while that game was going on. I talked about it in the last podcast, and I kind of fell asleep and then woke up, and I thought they were re-airing the game, but I saw that it was like 3 or 4 OT, and I was like, this is going insane. And I would actually check Twitter, and I saw you were still live tweeting during the game. So, like, how much coffee did it take for you to stay awake for that game? I know it was exciting, especially when they called back the Minnesota Duluth goal for the offsides, and like, oh my God, we're going through this shit again. And then there was cramps with goaltending. Like,
yep.
What went through your mind throughout that whole game?
Mostly once we got to like the third overtime, I was like, could somebody please just end this? Like anybody, could you just get it over with? And I was literally yelling shoot at the TV screen, and for both teams, I was just like, just shoot it. And I was like, this is wrong. What I'm doing is wrong. It's everything I hated a hockey game, but I'm doing it because I just desperately wanted to go to sleep. So it was kind of fun. It just got more and more absurd as the game went on. And as you mentioned, there was a disallowed goal for an offside that was offside. I mean, it was the right call. But, you know, it just, again, the offside challenge rears its ugly head in college hockey, just as it does in the NHL. And now, you know, they don't actually, you know, unlike the NHL, they don't have the rule about if your foot's in the air, you're still onside. So that's kind of, you know, that's what happened there. We also had an instance where North Dakota, one of the players took a shot. It bounced off the goalie's chest protector up and over and just on top of the net. which was one of the craziest plays. That was actually Jasper Weatherby. So shout out to the Sharks there for a good prospect there. But yeah, I mean, like he is, that was crazy. And then finally the game ends on a guy that Luke Millimock, who did not play a shift until the fourth overtime. So this kid was sitting there for like 5 hours, literally like 5 hours, comes off and scores the second goal of the season and ends the longest game in NCAA tournament history. So I managed to stay awake because it was the craziest thing that I've ever seen. There have been some really incredibly long overtime games in college hockey and conference tournaments before as well. I remember one a few years ago that involved Notre Dame and I think UMass at the time, and that one went like a little bit longer even. So yeah, it was, you know, you never know what you're going to expect and never know what to expect in college hockey, but certainly that group gave us a lot to enjoy.
The worst part about those long overtimes is by the third or the fourth overtime, you can tell everyone is just gassed and you're watching it. You're like, I don't know how these guys are going to score. These guys are way too tired.
Right. Exactly. And that's why, you know, it helps to have a guy that was sitting there for 5 hours, I guess, you know,
but, yeah, totally.
But yeah, but, and you're right. The other thing that you have to consider is, you know, when we watch a long overtime game in the NHL, we're watching the peak of athleticism. And these players have trained and their bodies are in a different level of conditioning of college players. Certainly college players aren't that far away from the NHL, but when you get down to like that third overtime, you're like, wow, these guys look like they're skating with cinder blocks on their feet. What's going to happen? And then, you know, every once in a while you'd see a flash of a guy that just got that burst of energy and got a little bit of adrenaline going and it made it more exciting. But yeah, I mean, I was worried that we were going to have guys get hurt. And as you mentioned, one of the goaltenders, Zach Stayskull, had to leave the game because he was cramping up, and you know, he had been in net for, you know, 54 saves or something like that. And then the other guy came in and made 6 saves and got the win. So, you know, like that's the way it goes sometimes.
Another day in the office.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk some San Jose Sharks. I want to know from you, since you're the prospect guy, how would you grade the prospects on the San Jose Sharks? And I want to include our guys in the NHL and in the juniors. So the guys in the NHL like Knyazhov and Leonard, and then some of our other guys in the junior ranks like Merkley and Weisblatt.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Shark system is one that never stays very full for very long, because it seems like they're in various stages where guys are ready and they end up moving up. And I think, you know, it's certainly not one of those systems where you say, wow, there is just talent everywhere. There's so much, but there's a lot of, I think it's grown a lot in the last couple of years. And so now I think we're seeing a deepening prospect pool for one that really was kind of depleted for years of low first round draft picks or guys that just happened to move up and graduate right away. You know, I think that, you know, Knyazhov John Leonard in particular, was the guy that I wanted to talk about. You know, I obviously watched him a lot last year and I was like, whoa, this guy took a humongous step. And then you see what he's able to do. And he comes into the NHL ready. I think you're going to see that with a lot of other guys where they have the luxury of letting those guys kind of develop wherever they are. You know, I think the Sharks in the last few years have taken bigger swings on highly skilled players. You know, like they took the shot with Ryan Merkley, which, you know, incredible with the puck on his stick. A lot of maturity issues in junior, a lot of other things. And that's something that's going to have to continue to be sorted out at the professional level. And I haven't had a chance to watch the Barracuda as much this year yet. I'm still, once I get through the college hockey stuff and once I get my draft rankings out, that's when I'm going to start going back and looking at more of the AHL guys as well. But I think that, you know, Merkley has a base of talent where you're like, hey, this is, you know, I understand why they took the risk. I still think there's a lot there that needs to be figured out. But then, you know, it's obviously, I don't think that you're looking at this prospect pool and saying, well, Ryan Merkley's all they have, because it's not the case. I mean, you look at obviously getting Weisblatt, getting Thomas Bortolo in the second round couldn't end up being one of the real coups of that draft. And in the last draft, because I think Bortolo, after watching him so much with Michigan this year, as I was watching their draft prospects with three guys that could potentially be in the top 10, Bortolo every time, every single game, did something that made me, sit up a little straighter and just be like, whoa, hey. And he did that to a point last year, but he did it much more this year. So I was really impressed with him. The guy that they just signed too, Scott Reedy, I think is a guy that you let that – it's a great example of just letting guys develop, get there when they're ready. I think he's much more ready to kind of play a lower lineup kind of position for them and at the NHL level. He was a top line player in college. I think he's going to fall down the lineup a little bit more. He's got good size, strength, good work ethic, really good speed, good shot. So all those types of things. Same thing with Jasper Weatherby, who's going back to North Dakota. So you've got prospects in college. You've got prospects with the Barracuda. You've got guys all over. Obviously, Jonathan Dahlin is still floating out there in the wind. We're like, is it ever gonna happen for him in North America? I honestly don't know. Certainly, we look at what he's done in the Allsvenskan and you say, holy smokes, how is this real at times? But he needs to take that step. With all due respect to the Allsvenskan, it's quite a long way from the NHL. And he's a player that has the skill. It just has to come together for him. So that's, again, and I think the other thing that's really nice is that they have players at all levels. I think, Joseph Coronar is interesting to me. I think that there's a lot of their goaltending. I mean, I think it needs to improve. They don't really have like a blue chip goaltending prospect, but I think you got guys at every position that you can feel pretty good about. And, I know I just kind of just threw a bunch of names out there, but I really do think that this is a prospect pool that has greatly improved in the last 2 years, and one that I think will continue to get better just because of the way that they have kind of structured their drafts and they're not afraid to take risks.
Yeah, we noticed that they've been kind of swinging, like you said, for the fences. Even with the Ozzie Weisblatt pick this last year, it was a bit of a surprise to most people when they decided to take him where they did at the end of the first, as well as Merkley. But you mentioned Bortolo, Thomas Bortolo. I watched him particularly close, mainly because he was one of the few prospects that was playing at a higher competitive level.
Right.
Can we just touch a little bit on how unlucky this year has been for Thomas Bortolo? He's snubbed from World Junior Championships due to the false positive COVID test from his roommate. Had a great year at Michigan, like you said. And then when they go to compete in the NCAA tournament, they get DQ'd to another COVID protocol situation. Now, chalk it up however you want to. It's an incredibly unlucky year for him. But do you think missing out on those opportunities, World Juniors, you're talking about a lot of competition, good experience for a young kid developing, as well as the NCAA tournament, do you think that could possibly hinder his development moving forward? Or is this just another like stepping stone he's going to have to get over, essentially?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to affect him really at all. Certainly he still has another opportunity to play at the World Juniors next year. That is, he will be age eligible, and I'm certain that he would be in the mix and probably a favorite to be on the team and play a substantial role on that team, assuming that this year is normal, compared, or this next year is normal compared to this year. But I think it does hurt to miss the postseason. They did play in the Big Ten tournament, which is a single elimination situation. So, like there are some high stakes games there. Ended up, losing in the championship game to, or in the semifinal to Minnesota, which was, two really good teams there. But I think for Bortolo, the most important thing for him is just to continue to get stronger. He played 24 games this season, which is a lot more than a lot of other players have been able to play at this point. He's in a good place for pro development. He's around elite players at Michigan. That's the other important thing, is when you go to college, you don't necessarily know how many of the guys around you are going to be high end players. At Michigan, he was playing with Brendan Brisson, and that's a first round draft pick that he's playing with, a guy that, I think if you did a redraft right now, you might take Thomas Bortolo ahead of Brendan Brisson at this point. So spicy. I think that, Bortolo is one of those guys that is going to need, he's exciting. he needs more time to just get, you know, to get stronger and to have a little bit more of a just develop more well-rounded game. I think his offensive tools are outstanding. His vision is really something. I mean, his ability to make plays and find open ice is truly impressive. So he's one of those guys that I think you just let him sit in college for a year, maybe another year after that, even just to let him, you want him to arrive ready and spend less time in the AHL. And I think that he's one of those guys, if you give him that 2-3 years of college hockey, you know, it could very much be like a John Leonard where he comes right in and essentially is ready to play. So I think that he's a real interesting guy. And yeah, I think it is unfortunate that he missed the World Juniors. He would have been on that team. You know, they still ended up winning gold without him. But yeah, losing him and Johnny Beecher basically right before the tournament was a real kick to the gut. And then basically they were in Fargo for the tournament, and then they basically unloaded their gear, tested, loaded their gear. They practiced. They even practiced in Fargo. Then they loaded their gear on the bus and they went home because basically they, you know, they got shut down the morning they were supposed to play. So, yeah, really tough one for him, but I think he's a really exciting prospect and one that what Sharks fans are going to really enjoy and definitely should watch next season when we expect him to return to the University of Michigan.
You know, Chris, you mentioned that under normal circumstances, you might have been already kind of gearing up to the draft a little bit more. And that kind of comes to the point of this draft really is going to be a bit of a crapshoot in the sense that some prospects didn't even get to play a full season. I know that there's a bit of a consensus coming out regarding, you know, where some picks are going to go. Do you agree with these early consensuses? And what are your views coming into this crazy draft?
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy. The thing is, you know, we got a lot of season to look at for guys that are really under the strongest consideration for number one overall. And I don't think it helped us figure it out anymore about who really it should be. I mean, I think the general consensus right now, at least among the scouts that I've talked to, and I will be talking to a lot more of them in the next couple of days, is, you know, Owen Power from the University of Michigan, 6'5" defenseman, is largely considered, but not certainly not unanimously considered the number one prospect for this draft. There are others that think maybe it's Luke Hughes from the National Team Development Program, Jack and Quinn's younger brother, that he could be number one. Some people think it's Matty Beniers at Michigan. Some people think it's Dylan Gunther from the Edmonton Royal Kings. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with here. I mean, I think there are even people that would say maybe it's William Eklund from Jew Gardens. So it's wild that I've never covered a draft where there was this much uncertainty. And then obviously we have this weird season where most everybody, you know, they've had to do mostly video work. You know, crossover scouts, they're not getting to as many games in outside of their own region. You know, nobody's seeing what's happening in Europe live outside of their area scouts that are already there. You know, so we've got some really important events coming up with the World Under 18 Championship, which I think is suddenly the most important and will be the most scouted event in North America, like ever, because it's going to be in Texas and it's going to be Sweden and Canada and US and Finland and Russia. And so now finally, a lot of those European players are coming here to North America. So general managers and head scouts and crossover scouts are going to be able to see these players that they've been getting reports on from their area scouts. So that's going to be really important. But yeah, I think that I agree mostly that I think based on what I've seen this season, for me, the top pick comes down to either Owen Power or Matty Beniers, both at the University of Michigan. Beniers is a do everything center. He's not your prototypical, highly skilled. You know, he's not Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel type. He's more of a Jonathan Toews, Patrice Bergeron type, where, you know, and those guys in their draft seasons don't end up going at number one, or in Bergeron's case, in the first round. You know, so it's like all these different things come into play. He's not your traditional number one, but I think he impacts the game as much or more than any forward in this draft based on his total complement of skills. Also, I think that, you know, with Power, he's such a rare commodity, being a 6 foot five defenseman that skates as smoothly as he does, moves the puck well, gets pucks up ice. I think he steadily improved throughout the season as well. He got better defensively, made better puck decisions. I think everything kind of rounded out. His offensive game improved over time. Those are two guys that I think are really the front runners for number one for me, at least. And when I do finally release my draft rankings, I mean, I think it's more likely than not it'll start with power there. I don't necessarily know if I'll finish with them there in the summer when I release my final draft rankings. But I think based on the whole body of work and the fact that there really isn't much consensus, nor is there really any clear guy for me that I've evaluated that I think is so far above everybody else in that pack of players, that I think it'll ultimately be Owen Power or Matty Beniers. I mean, tune in to find out. We'll see.
Yeah, it might make my next question a little tough, but do you think there's a sleeper pick that you see maybe going outside of, say, the top 15 that to keep an eye on?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think in any year, there are always going to be those guys that sneak in somewhere that, you know, there's not as much of a consensus on, and guys that, you know, last year for me, that guy was like Lucas Reichel. There was a lot of places didn't necessarily have him in the first round. Even the Blackhawks took him 17th, and that's exactly where I had him too. Was 17th on my board, and you know, I think that guys like that have high value. So usually in those instances, I'm looking for players with higher skill levels. And, you know, so for me, I think one of those guys very well could be Cole Sillinger, who's currently playing for the Sioux Falls Stampede. Some people have him like as a top 15 guy. A lot of NHL people I've talked to are not as necessarily certain that he's a top 15 pick. But really brilliant scorer, deadly release on his shot. You know, his skating does need to improve a little bit, and he's not the biggest guy, so you always worry a little bit about when that happens. But he has such an elite shooting tool and then also really great playmaking skills. I think that he's the kind of guy that has the skill set where he could drop a little bit further than he should, and then all of a sudden you get a high value pick out of a guy like him. So I think like guys like that, Cole Sillinger, maybe Nikita Chibrikov, if there is a you know, kind of a, he's one of those Russian guys where you're just like, I don't know, maybe yes. I think this year it's going to be really interesting to see how teams value, you know, the Russian players. That most of them have played full seasons. They've gotten in either in their junior league or in the KHL. They played a full year, so they have the most complete body of work. So it'll be interesting to see if that helped or hindered them. But guys like that, where there's a high skill level, but there might be one or two things that don't quite work right. Like maybe it's the skating, or maybe there's just, you know, something like that. It's usually the skating that forces a guy to drop. But yeah, I'd say that Sillinger and Chibrikov are two of those guys that I'd look for in that middle tier that could jump up and bring value.
So moving kind of our attention over to the Sharks right now, they're flirting with disaster because they feel like as players, they want to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But where they're at, or how we feel on this podcast kind of unanimously, is it would be better off if they didn't make the playoffs to, you know, get themselves a better draft pick, because much like DW said, they're in reset mode. Essentially, they're focusing on the younger players moving forward. We talked a little bit earlier about the Sharks kind of swinging for the fences the last couple of drafts, and you touched on yourself, the Sharks don't have a blue chip goaltending prospect. So this all seems to be the perfect storm for kind of what I want to talk about next, is what are the Sharks' biggest needs that could be addressed, let's just say, in the first round, mm-hmm. and what would fit well specifically with them, and why is it Jesper Wallstedt?
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly he's the guy that is really the anointed one in terms of the goaltending prospects this year. I think there are actually two potential goalies that could go in the first round this year, Wallstedt being one of them, and then the other being Sebastian Kosa, who is the goaltender for the Edmonton Oil Kings. And I think, like, so that's an interesting situation, because you know, Kosa's numbers in the early goings in a very small sample this year are really incredible. I'm just going to pull them up here while we're talking, because I think it's, you know, to see that, to have that other option in the event that, say, they do make the playoffs. You know, Kotze is the kind of guy that could potentially slip down. He's a big goalie. You know, he's let's see, 6'6", 212 pounds. You know, he is 10-0 right now in 11 appearances, 942 save percentage in the WHL, had a 921 last year. You know, so that's the kind of guy where you could say, hey, maybe if we do make it. If you don't, I do think that Wahlstedt's more of a lottery type pick. I don't know. There are enough things. You're catching me right after I've watched a ton of Wahlstedt video. Because I've been working on my draft rankings, and I as I continued to watch, you know, just I came into it just fully enamored with the skill set and the technique and all these other things. And then when you watch enough video of players, and this happens to everybody, so maybe I'm just nitpicking, but as you watch more video of players, you're like, you start to poke holes in them. And Wahlstedt was a guy where I was like, wow, the more video I watch, the less I like him. You know, I shouldn't say that. Like, I still think he's a top tier goalie prospect. I think he's got a potential to be a number one. I think the things that he has to do better are correctable. I don't think he's as explosive post to post as some of the other guys that I've seen. I think sometimes he gets a little bit lost. I have some concerns about his hockey sense as well. Just in terms of the decisions that he makes when he is handling the puck, or his pre-shot reads are a little bit, you know, sometimes he doesn't get all the way to where he needs to be, loses his angle a little more than I realized that he, after, again, this is watching video and being able to see all the warts, you know, that you might not even see in a live game. So I would say if you end up in the lottery section of the draft, that's such a hugely valuable pick. I think there might be better options at both forward and defense. And I do think that there are needs on defense. You know, they've certainly been able to fill some of those holes. And, you know, I love the way that Mario Ferraro's turned out. I love the way that some of those guys have really stepped into those roles. But, you know, can you, if you're in the lottery, there's a good chance you can land an impact defenseman in this situation. A guy that can play, you know, good two-way hockey. And I agree with you guys. I think that they are in a precarious place, because I would not want, you know, if I'm a Sharks fan, if I'm looking at the long-term health of the team, I want to have the best possible pick. Now, you know, it's too early to say what next year's draft is going to look like, because we haven't seen a lot of the guys that have played this year. But, I mean, there's certainly a lot of excitement about next year's draft with some of the guys that are going to be available at the top. But, you know, I don't think the Sharks fully intend to be a lottery, you know, in the lottery next year too. Maybe they will be, but yeah. So I'd say that, you know, if you do make the playoffs and you're comfortable with where Kotze is in terms of where your pick is, I think that he actually could end up being a better value pick than Wahlstedt, even if all goes as planned. You just look at what he's done so far this year. I think he has all the tools to be a top tier goaltender as well. So if you have one of those two, and you can plug that hole, and you're fairly confident that either one of them could be the number one, then, you know, I think you're really happy if you walk out of the draft with either of them.
Awesome. It's good to hear. So we're throwing away Jesper Wahlstedt. Just canon. He sucks apparently. I'm kidding. No,
don't do that. Don't do that.
You know, thanks again for all your time, Chris. We really appreciate you hopping on. You know, for the next couple of minutes or so, the floor is all yours. Pump whatever content you have coming out. Let the fans know where to find you on all the social media and where to find all your work.
Sure. Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, guys. It's been a pleasure. And yeah, if you want to check out some of the stuff that I've got going on, hockeysense.substack.com is the website where most of my written work is going to be. We will have the 2021 spring draft rankings, so the second to last before I update again at the end, towards the end of the draft. A good chance to look at kind of where the draft class stands. Talking Hockey Sense podcast. We've got a men's Frozen Four preview this week. And that just covers so many different elements of the game as well. It's been a lot of fun to do. So you can get that pretty much wherever you get podcasts. And then also I'm on Twitter at Chris M. Peters. I will be at the Frozen Four. I'm leaving tomorrow. So I'm excited to be at a thing, which, you know, I have not done in over a year. So that's going to be great. And I'll be doing on-site coverage there for Hockey Sense. And then also I do betting advice on betway.com as well. So if you are into making wagers, fade my picks. So that's my that's my best advice I can give you.
Awesome. But, yeah. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great rest of your day. I hope that the spring weather is beautiful out there in Iowa.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. Great to be with you.
Big shout out to Chris Peters for jumping on the podcast. Much smarter man than all three of us combined. When it comes to draft talk and prospects and probably life in general, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, he's got greater hockey sense for sure.
He really does. He really does. Boys, this is the new game show that is sweeping across the nation. It's called Tea Time with Producer T. And you know what?
We even got a clip this time.
We even got a clip, and we're going to get right into it.
Good morning, asshole, and welcome to Tea Time
with Producer T.
All right, boys, out of 10, how would you rate that clip?
I'm going to have to give it a solid 9.5.
9.5, Nick?
That's a fucking tenner in my book,
that's
buddy.
That's what I'm talking about. That's a tenner in my books.
You can't go 10 because then if you do a better clip.
There is no better clip.
There's no better clip. That's it. That's right. That's the tea time, baby. All right, let's get right into it. Tea time, and this has basically been forced upon us by Isha Jerome of the Soda Pod. We love it. We love it. So it's, yeah, it's, I like it though. This is a new segment popping out of nowhere, and it's involving Producer T, so even better. So let's get into it. Here are the questions from Isha Jerome. First question, is a group of squids called a squad?
Yes. Squid squad.
Squid
hell
squad.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Or is it the squad squid?
Squads of squid.
Squads of squid. There we go.
Sounds like a band.
Dude, honestly, I'm
band name.
T-shirt. Squid.
Yeah. All right. Next question. If Apple made a car, would it have windows?
Yes. I mean, I get the
Windows 10.
Yeah. Windows. Well, they've got 10 windows.
Windows Vista.
I can also kind of see Apple being that car. If they did make cars, just no windows at all. Like, yeah, literally,
it's just all like TVs around the whole thing with cameras pointing out.
You don't get to actually see outside. You know, it's just a TV monitor.
Zero latency. It's like, but what if there's something there that's not there?
Yeah. Yeah. You lose like GPS connection. The car just, all the screens just shut off. And you just fucked.
You open the door, you're in the middle of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. All right. Next question. If you're waiting for the waiter, does that not make you the waiter?
Yes. It does, in fact, make you the waiter.
So is there two waiters in this situation?
Yeah.
Then?
There's the waitee and the waiter.
The waitee and the waiter. This guy's coming out with the big questions. With the big
answers. You start then waiting on other tables while you're waiting for your waiter?
Ooh. Well, no, because then once you start serving other people, you're no longer waiting, which makes you no longer a waiter.
Does the waiter now have to tip you for being a waiter?
That's the big money ticket. Yeah,
that's the 15% question right
next
there.
Next time,
folks,
I go to a restaurant, I'll be like, you know what, actually, I think you should tip me because I was waiting. That'll go down well, boys.
All right, next question. Why is bacon cooked yet cookies are baked?
This is a great question. I have no idea. But I think
you ever got baked from bacon?
Hey! No, I have from cookies, though.
Exactly. That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about.
I think it's just because, like cakes and cookies and stuff, you'd use convection bake, you know? You know, and then if you're cooking bacon, you don't, I think you maybe roast it, you know? Put it on roast.
It goes in the oven, my man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. But if you want to get on technicalities, you know.
Well, I mean, and you can cook bacon on a pan on the stovetop, exactly. Right? You're going to make a cookie that way? That'd be fucked up.
Yeah. You bake sweet, kind of like breads and biscuits and cookies. Biscuits.
All right. So last question here. This has been a great tea talk, by the way.
I think it's been the best.
Last question. What do you call a Trail BC resident with two spliffs? Now, keep in mind, people, that the Trail Smoke Eaters is the hockey team, the BCHL team in Trail.
I honestly think this should be on their logos. Is it double jointed?
Oh, double jointed. Boom! There we go. Bay Area hordes everywhere.
I love it.
Wow, that's quite a way to end off a podcast. Yeah, that was
I love an ending, boys.
That was a good one. We were considering actually nixing this segment, but after we saw how pumped you were, we're just gonna keep it going. We're gonna keep it going here. And we got a new clip, so we have to. I'm not gonna make this clip for a one-time use here, boys. This is here to stay.
Deserves more than one time.
It has to at least go as long as Nick will try it.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Yes.
So basically, T, what I'm trying to say is we need to see you puke before we can end the segment. All right, boys, anything else we want to talk about before we jump out of here?
I think that was the perfect ending.
Big shout out to Chris Peters for jumping on this podcast. Big shout out to Kyle McLaren. I hope that deck is going well. I don't know about that guy's carpentry skills. Yeah. I mean, played 10 or so years in the NHL, comes out, starts building decks. Might look a little crooked.
He's like, I'm laying the wood, boys.
Okay. We're like, Kyle, it's 9 o'clock. He's like, I know. Anyways, boys, let's give a shout out to our Twitter handles. You can follow myself at @DYL_THPN. You can follow the show at Stick Hungry Pod. You can follow the network, the Hockey Podcast Network, at Hockey Pod Net. Producer T?
@producer_TEE.
And Nick?
You find me at my balls hurt. I'm kidding. @NickFloor_.
You should really call a doctor about that, Nick.
Hey, we're scoring, so fuck it.
There we go.
Hey, when that line doesn't score, do they then have blue balls?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely they do. All right, folks. This has been a hell of an episode. We will catch you on the live stream on Sunday.